Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. We're in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on this Thanksgiving Eve. Be safe out there as you travel around. And enjoy your Thanksgiving very, very much. I know I'll be in the area tomorrow. I'll be at basketball practice tomorrow at Soika. And then the game itself will be at 4 o'clock on Friday, 3:30, the airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Penn State football Saturday, 3:30 the kickoff, 2 o'clock the airtime as the Nittany Lions take on Michigan State. Let's bring in Greg Pickle from Fight on State. Greg, great to have you with us. As you've talked to the players this week, what kind of mood have they been in?
Yeah, you know, Steve, I think that they sound pretty energetic. You know, I actually think they sound better than they did a couple weeks ago heading into the Indiana game after that Ohio State game. You know, after the Maryland game, I thought, you know, that they sounded a little down and out after that Maryland game. But, you know, this week there seems to be a lot of energy. I think these kids really, really realize what they have the opportunity to do, not just play for the senior class, but also become the third team, you know, to have a great season finale against a really good opponent in a game that'll be, you know, featured on national television. So I think that, you know, these guys have a break away from school. They sort of have the week to just focus on football, and they're taking advantage of it. You know, there were a lot during the conference call today with players, and of course, James Franklin's weekly news conference just ended not too long ago. You know, these guys just really seem to be ready to play and focus on Michigan State, and, you know, for good reasons. They're not looking back too much at Illinois, but it's all about Michigan State, and it seems like the energy is there and really everything you need to go out and play a team like Michigan State, you know, in the home finale.
The last two senior classes, and now this, the third one, since all this has happened, I don't know if you could thrust more on a group of 18 to 22, 23-year-olds that they've had to work their way through as student-athletes than these individuals. In your opinion, how have they handled all of this?
Oh, terrifically. You know, I think that anybody that stayed and saw everything through that these guys have here, and then to have seasons like most of these guys are having, you know, I think it's an incredible testament to a couple things, not just their leadership and the way guys on this team look up to them in terms of the underclassmen, but also the fact that these guys have steadily gotten better since all of this went down, and they had to do so under really three different strength and conditioning coordinators. Three different coaching staffs with different position coaches. I mean, these guys have been through a lot. I think it says a lot that, you know, their academics haven't suffered, their on-field play hasn't suffered. They've improved and gotten bigger and stronger and faster, and the numbers yield that out. But they've also, you know, obviously done things off the field to help out the community, that's helped them out. You know, there's been a very big recognition by these guys that the community has helped them out, and they want to return the favor. So I think you've seen that come into play some. I mean, these guys have it's amazing and incredible what they've been through. I think you'll be hard pressed to find senior classes in this senior class like this one that has been through what these guys have over the course of, you know, 4 or 5 years here at Penn State, and to be in a position to win your senior day game and finish with another win over a ranked team, to be able to go to a bowl game after, you know, realizing not long after you got on campus that, you know, things weren't going to be happening in terms of going to a bowl game. I mean, these guys have just been through a lot, and the ones that stuck around have obviously become really big leaders to this program and to these players. And I think that, you know, down the road you'll see guys on this team now that might be younger emulating some of the traits that these guys have shown. And I think that's really a testament to the fact that these guys have a lot of traits and a lot of leadership characteristics that you'd want on any football team. They've had to get them through ways that maybe aren't characteristic of the normal ways that college football players pick up leadership traits and things like that, but they have them nonetheless. And I think it's only going to continue to help this Penn State football team even after they graduate.
Greg, you have to deal with them, obviously, all the time, whether it's on a conference call, in a locker room, whatever. How have they been with you, and how have they been with the other reporters as they've gone through this odyssey?
Oh, these guys have been terrific. You know, all of these guys, and not just the senior class, you know, not just to pigeonhole it to them, but, you know, all of these guys, you know, throughout the 3 years that I've been in covering this team and everything, you know, these guys have always been great and always willing to share their insight on, on how things are going with the team, on how things are going with themselves, on things they can do better, things that they, you know, that they haven't done that they'd like to do, things that, you know, that they've done well that they want to share on and off the field. I mean, these guys have always been great, and I think that, you know, whether it was, you know, Joe Paterno, Bill O'Brien, you have James Franklin now, of course, you know, these guys have always had good guidance on how to deal with the media, and I think that, you know, they really have taken it upon themselves to help cast the image of Penn State through the media by what they say and what they do, you know, and Mike Hall is an epitome of that. Miles Diefenbaugh is an epitome of that. Jesse Della Valle is an epitome of that. You know, Adrian Amos, all these guys that have come through this program have always been really good as far as I'm concerned with the media. And I think they've always, you know, shared stories and answered questions, hard questions or softer questions with, you know, the same mannerisms and the same regard for the fact that, you know, they're helping portray what Penn State is about, you know, one question and one answer at a time.
Obviously, each week brings with it a test, and each week brings with it an emotion by the fan base and anyone around it. Have you expected to hear some of the comments that you've read or seen or heard from fans, or have you been surprised by it?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, you know. Yeah, it's hard to sort of take a step back and look at the big picture for fans when the team is losing to Illinois, a team that, you know, obviously there's history with Tim Beckman, but also a team that's perennially, at least over the last couple of years, been a down program that Penn State and Penn State fans have sort of seen felt like they were on a higher plateau than Illinois. But when you look at the big picture of it, you know, obviously, there were reasons this happened. There were reasons that, you know, Penn State is in the position it is. And you have to look at those and remember them. But that's not easy to do for fans a lot of the times when, you know, the offense isn't working. You know, the defense is letting up plays that lead to losses. You know, the special teams are malfunctioning. You know, when all of these things are happening, fans become fans. And fans hardly ever look at the big picture. And I think that we're seeing that, you know, this week and perhaps a little bit in the weeks before, just not looking at the big picture, not remembering what these guys were overcoming. And, you know, I think we're seeing the fans sort of now, a couple days after the facts, sort of look at the big picture and say, well, hey, you know, this happened, but this is X, Y, and Z of why we'll be ready, you know, to expand and be better in the future because of what we're doing, even though it led to mistakes this season, whether it's the youth and experience, what have you. But, you know, I'm not really surprised by it. Fans are always going to be fans. They're always going to have high expectations. And even when things don't go well because of the big picture, you know, they're going to look at the small week by week picture and really base things off of that for at least some period of time before coming to a realization. So, no, not really surprised by it.
How often do you have to remind yourself of the big picture?
I would say every now and again, for sure. I mean, I think sometimes you watch, you know, this team, and this really goes for any sport you cover, whether it be football, hockey, you know, basketball, wrestling, what have you. You know, I think sometimes you watch a team as a reporter and you talk to these guys all week and they say, you know, we're going to do this week, or we're going to do that this week, or this is going to be better this week, you know. You know, some of these guys, you know, might say, well, the offensive line, you know, we're seeing improvement every day in practice. We're going to be better this week. And then they go out and struggle. Or, you know, when Daniel Pascarella was struggling, you know, you'd hear James Franklin and his teammates say, hey, Danny's booming the ball in practice. You know, we think he's close. We think he's close. And then you go out and maybe that week, despite thinking he was close or despite the improvements in practice from a position group, they don't do it. And you sort of sit there as a reporter and you say, okay, were these guys, you know, being untruthful and just saying this to say it, or were they serious and maybe it just didn't translate? And I think sometimes that's the biggest thing you have to do is sort of realize that sometimes just because things, you know, it's in every walk of life, and sometimes when things, even though it looks like they're getting better, it might still take some time for them to get better. So it definitely has to happen sometimes just to remember where this team is, how young it is, what kind of challenges it's facing, and then from there, you know, you sort of get that big picture back in terms of what's really going on here.
I took some time, obviously, Sunday and Monday in my usual routine to get ready for a game and run the numbers on teams, you know, and, you know, again, as I always point out to people, you probably use 2-3% of it during the broadcast, but the 2-3% change, which 2-3% changes every week. When I ran the Michigan State numbers, Greg, it was eye-opening. across the board as to what they have. When you look at them, what impresses you about Michigan State?
There's quite a bit. You know, I really don't understand how this team got blown out by Ohio State. I just don't. And Ohio State's a terrific team. But when you look at the numbers, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, it really makes you just think back to some of the games Penn State had, you know, where things just snowballed and bad went to worse and worse went to really bad and then really bad went to very, very bad. And, you know, it sort of all went downhill from there for Michigan State in that game. I mean, this team, there's not much it doesn't do well. I mean, you look at its defense, it's obviously very good. You look at its offense. It does a lot of different things. It can run. It can pass. It can run out of heavy sets. It can pass out of heavy sets. I mean, this team does almost everything you'd want a football team to be able to do in terms of mixing personnel, in terms of, you know, battling different adversities and things that defensive coordinators throw at them. This is going to be a heck of a test for Bob Stoops and this Penn State defense. I mean, Michigan State is not a predictable offense. It's not really an offense you can look at and say, okay, well, if we stop that, then we'll, you know, we won't have to worry about too much. I mean, this team does a lot of things well, and I think what impresses me most is just the versatility of the offense and the defense. You know, this is two units coached by two very smart individuals that can really, really form itself to any sort of front it needs to combat whatever the opposing offense or defense is throwing at it. And further, they have the athletes to do it. I mean, they have the kind of players that, you know, when James Franklin talks about looking to year three of his tenure as having the guys and all this stuff to run the formations and the personnel that he wants, you know, Michigan State's a pretty darn good example of what he's talking about in terms of having older, experienced guys to be able to run a lot of different things that lead to success.
Defensively, we were talking before Temple. Man, look at Temple, and all, you know, they have six defensive touchdowns. And Michigan State is plus 19 giveaway takeaway. They have 31 takeaways. They have 103 points off their takeaways. This is not the Michigan State defense of last year. Right? Everyone knows that. But what do you see in that defense that makes them really special, Greg?
Yeah, well, I think the two things that stand out to me are the two biggest ones that have led to their success, and that's the fact that they're fast and athletic, and they can really play the ball well. They play it well, not just trying to rip it away from the running backs or the receivers when they're carrying it, but they also play the ball well in pass coverage. You know, they high point the ball, they find it, and more often than not, that leads to either swatting it away or intercepting it. And it's a very aggressive, opportunistic defense that knows what it's looking for and knows what it needs to do to take the ball away from the offense without having them having to punt it. And, you know, all of those things really are what's made this Michigan State defense, you know, so good in terms of giveaway takeaway. I mean, obviously the offense has helped by not putting them on short fields, by not really turning the ball over much itself. But, I mean, obviously to have that kind of ratio, you have to be doing quite a bit right on defense. And Michigan State really has been just by being, you know, opportunistic. And they have long guys. They have long athletic guys that can play multiple positions and can run. And when you have guys that can do that, you know, more often than not, it's going to lead to good things for you.
Greg, to you and yours, have a great Thanksgiving. And thanks, as always, for all the time that you give us, the insight. I always enjoy our conversations very much.
As do I, Steve. Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you Saturday.
Greg Pickle from Fight On State. Great to have him with us. And let's make the transition now to Steelers football. They have the Saints coming up. That will be Sunday at Heinz Field. We bring in Jeff Hartman behind the steelcurtain.com. Jeff, welcome. It's great to have you with us. You watched the Saints on Monday night. What stuck out to you?
Defensively, they've been hit or miss in the past few seasons. Under Rob Ryan, obviously he likes to send a lot of pressure, but offensively is where I saw some disconnect. And Drew Brees, normally a pinpoint passer, he definitely orchestrates the offense to what he wants to do, not so much what the defense wants to do. And it was basically a complete opposite of that, in my opinion. Drew Brees, I felt like he was pressing, like he felt like he always had to make a play. And then when he threw the pick six, I believe that was in the third quarter, it just seemed like the entire dome was deflated, and you can kind of see on everyone's face, Drew Brees included, that the game was over. He's been turning the ball over a lot, and that team doesn't get a lot of turnovers. And so I think that's kind of where they've been having their hang-up this year. It's still going to be a tough test for Pittsburgh, even at Heinz Field. And we know that the Saints are only 1-4, believe it or not, outside the dome this year. So it's still going to be a tough test for the Steelers, if you ask me.
And it's not going to be warm out there. The next part is the matchup with Jimmy Graham. Give me an idea the difficulty based on what the Steelers have that would make Jimmy Graham a tough matchup for them.
I think that when you're talking about Jimmy Graham, it depends on where he's lined up. If he's lined up in that bunch formation or even on the line of scrimmage, you're hoping that Ryan Shazier is healthy enough to play. He has the speed and athleticism to kind of stay with Jimmy Graham. He doesn't have the height or probably the leaping ability. I think the biggest issue that Jimmy Graham poses is that he rarely is ever in that position. He's normally out wide. He's normally in the flanker position. And when you do that, you're almost forcing a defensive back to be on him. And so Ike Taylor's going to return to the lineup this week. Mike Tomlin said that today in his press conference. How he returns, not sure yet. But if I'm the Steelers, I'm putting William Gay. When Ike Taylor's on the field and they have Jimmy Graham in the slot, I'm putting William Gay on Jimmy Graham. And he plays the slot better than anyone else on that team. That's going to allow the safeties to still do their job on the back end. Jimmy Graham definitely poses an issue going against the Steelers defense that has typically struggled against athletic pass-catching tight ends.
Right, now the bye week. What was your read on Mike Tomlin's press conference as to what he talked about with the bye and then how about where they are with the stretch run about to come up with no more byes?
I think that he's I think he's optimistic based on the fact that the defense is starting to get some of their players back. He sounded upbeat in the press conference. He had the look of a coach that saw that you know he feels his team is ready to go on this stretch run. Five games left in that AFC North. I mean, every team is at three games over 500. That's the first time in NFL history that that's happened at any point in the season. I think that he's a coach that realizes that if he can get Ike Taylor back, it's going to help bolster the secondary. If Troy Polamalu can remain healthy, if Shazier can come back to the middle, Steve McClennon eventually at nose tackle, and then maybe, just maybe, Jarvis Jones to help pitch in on the outside pass rush. This defense could be a defense to be reckoned with if they can just kind of get through these next few games.
Roethlisberger. Is it the same old Ben we've watched in recent years, or you know, can you give me a read as to where you think Ben is better than what we've seen in the past, and where's an area or two where he needs to be better down the stretch?
Personally, I think this has been Roethlisberger's best year in the pocket. If you watched Roethlisberger earlier in his career, in the early, obviously late mid to late 2000s. He was winning a lot of games, but you always saw read one wasn't there, read two wasn't there, and I'm going to scramble out of the pocket, make a play down the field to Hines Ward or Antonio Holmes and a number of receivers. And he still can make those plays. But what I'm seeing now that he's doing well is he's being able to dissect the defense from within the pocket. Normally, defenses and defensive coordinators would say, we want to keep Roethlisberger in the pocket. He's proving that he can beat you from the pocket this year. But I think that what he struggles with so far is that he really is holding on to the ball too long. And that's nothing new with Roethlisberger. But I think with this offense, what he needs to understand is that sometimes it's okay to just throw it away, take your lumps, even if it's on third down, and punt the ball away. He's had a lot of turnovers, not only throwing the ball when he's pressured. You saw that against the Jets. You saw it again on Monday Night Football against the Titans where he's had really bad red zone interceptions. He's had the ball stripped back from him when pressure has surrounded him. Those turnovers can be erased by just being smarter with the football. So I think that's probably where he needs to improve. But as a pocket passer, he's gotten tremendously better, in my opinion.
Let's get to the White House. We know what Antonio Brown brings to the table. On the other side, we've seen sparks, you know, from Brian, from Whedon. What is the level of consistency from those guys? Is it better than it was in September, or are they still, to your opinion, inconsistent?
I think that they're starting to find consistency. They started off consistent. Marcus Whedon was a major contributor across from Antonio Brown, and they had that lull, which coincided with some poor play, obviously, like against Cleveland, at Cleveland. But then since Martavis Bryant's gotten into the lineup, it seems like everything's kind of starting to even its way out. You can even throw Heath Miller into that topic of conversation as well, because you're looking at Antonio Brown's always going to get his catches and his touches and his targets. But now Martavis Bryant is kind of taking, looks like he's taking some of that pressure off of Marcus Whedon, which therefore is helping Marcus Whedon perform. He might not be getting the targets, but he's making plays when he needs to. Heath Miller's become more of a passing threat. And even Lance Moore is a guy that doesn't have a lot of catches but has found his way into the offense, kind of found his own niche and realized what he can do to help the team. I think consistency has been showing the last few weeks to see if they can continue that after the bye week on a really, really important 5-game stretch.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 at 15, Hubbell's Wharf. Bottom of the hour news coming up next half hour. George Blaha, the play-by-play voice of Michigan State football. We'll talk with George about this outstanding Michigan State football team. They'll be here Saturday at 3:30. News is next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at SunburyMotors.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show. Be safe out there as you travel, and we hope you're traveling in a beautiful Sunbury Motors vehicle. Sunbury Motors has been with us since day one. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You know, happy Thanksgiving to each and every one of you. You cannot put a price in this business on what an audience means to you, because you are priceless. And you also can't put a price on working with a guy like Kevin Herr. You know, we can kid around all we want. But to say I think the world of that guy would be an understatement, and what he has meant to the show and how much fun we have in the show, arguing back and forth. Now, some of the arguments are absolutely legitimate, and some of the arguments back and forth are sometimes a little contrived just to have some fun. But he is the best to work with, and make no mistake, as you listen to the show, two good friends are talking back and forth. And Bob Buhner, of course, who joins our mix all the time, is fabulous as well. And I can't wait to see the gang when I go to Lewisburg on Friday. Here's the setup. It's going to be Penn State Bucknell Friday. Bucknell won last night, beat Humes, as we affectionately call them, Maryland Eastern Shore. Bucknell won it last night. And Penn State won last night, down by 13 at the break against a very good Akron team. They rallied and won the game, 78-72. Another really great early season performance by DJ Newbill. There are very few players playing at a better level than he is right now. And that game will be at Soica, and it's about time Penn State played a game at Bucknell. I have felt for years they should play a game at Bucknell. One for one, maybe not, but two out of three, whatever, absolutely. Penn State finally gets to play in Soica, which is an incredible, incredible gym. So we're looking forward to that. That'll be 4 o'clock on Friday. Dick and I will be on the air beginning at 3:30. Saturday, Penn State football, the Nittany Lions will take on Michigan State at Beaver Stadium, Senior Day. That's a 3:30 kick. Jack and I will be on the air with that one beginning at 2 o'clock, and you hear all of this here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. For the outstanding Michigan State fans, they get to hear George Blaha, 37 years as the play-by-play voice of Michigan State football. He is number 10 on the current list of consecutive years of play-by-play with one school. Bob Robertson of Washington State, by the way, is number one, 48 years. And Bill Hillgrove of Pitt, who's been on our show before, and of course is also the voice of the Steelers, is now actually number two on that list at 45 years. George, my friend, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show.
Steve, good to be on with you. I love listening to you on the Penn State games.
Well, same here as I listen to you on Michigan State. Never sounded better, my friend. Interesting question, because it turns out that Duffy Doherty's nephew, Pat Doherty, owns and runs the Tavern Restaurant here in downtown State College. And that has always been a very special era in Michigan State football.
Sure.
Might we be witnessing, though, the golden age of Michigan State football now with Mark D'Antonio?
Well, I think that what Mark has done is exemplary. Because he's done everything the right way, and he is turning into win after win after win, including, of course, last year, the Big Ten Championship, and becoming Rose Bowl champions. There's a lot to be said for what he has done. I think I still consider it somewhat modern football, frankly. If you go even back to what Biggie Munn did in the late 40s and early 50s at Michigan State, 28-game winning streak, I think it was,
right.
A couple of national championships. Duffy later won national championships with a couple of the greatest teams of all time in the middle 60s. So I don't know if you put anybody ahead of Biggie and Duffy, but you certainly have to include Mark D'Antonio's resume right now with those two guys, because I think it's difficult to do what he's done and how he's done it. He didn't just herd in every five-star recruit in the area. They brought in high-character kids from solid families, and they've just coached them up to a great degree. And I think he's very, very proud of these young men, and he should be. And we're proud of him.
He had to make a very difficult decision early last year because the quarterback situation was in flux coming out of training camp. He settled on Connor Cook. What characteristics gave Connor Cook the edge? And then talk about his journey to this point over the last 2 years.
Well, I think Connor Cook had, if you recall, the year before I helped the Spartans come back and win a bowl game in the closing minutes, and so he knew that the kid could make plays under duress and that he probably wasn't going to be overwhelmed by the job, so he thought he should give him a chance, and, you know, the results were spectacular. And Andrew Maxwell is a really solid, solid young man and had a great arm, and for whatever reason got into a slump because guys were dropping passes. The receivers hadn't really grown up yet. And, you know, now you wouldn't start to force things because guys were dropping passes because they'd be catching the ball. So, you know, there were problems that Andrew had to deal with, and it kind of it seemed like, anyway, it put him in a little bit of a funk, and he wasn't playing up to his capabilities. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not like the NBA where I also work, where I have an 82-game schedule. Right. You have time to come out of a slump, or like baseball when you got 100 and zillion games, a chance to come out of a slump. In college football, it's coming up next Saturday. You got to figure out a way to get your team a win, and Mark D'Antonio did that.
Jeremy Langford, he made the conversion from defensive back to running back, and he ran off 8 straight 100-yard rushing games a year ago. This year, first 3 games, whatever, but the last 8, he's over 100 again. In conjunction with that offensive line and the tight ends, what kind of special back is he?
Well, first of all, I really like Jeremy. He's a great young man. And, you know, when he came to Michigan State, he came as a guy who was a heck of a running back in high school, felt like he was a running back, but the Spartans knew they had a boatload of running backs. They thought he was too good to be on the sideline, so they tried him at other spots, and he was decent at other spots. But as a guy who was fortunate enough to go to some scrimmages, I saw him make play after play after play in scrimmages, and I knew that he still had the ability, whenever he got an opportunity as maybe the fourth-string running back in a scrimmage, to make plays. So when he got his opportunity before last season, we had every school has a media day, and they bring in players, and each player sits at a table, and reporters come up and talk to them. Well, nobody came up to talk to Jeremy Langford at media day before last season except me.
Yeah.
And I didn't need to get any quotes for a paper or any audio cuts for a radio station. I was just there to try and learn some things, and mostly I talked to the coaches and not the players. But at times I talked to the players, and I wanted to just go give Jeremy a little bit of encouragement, if I could. I said, you've got a great opportunity here. Not too often as a junior you get a chance to become the number one running back at a school of this caliber, and I guess you got every opportunity now, and I know you've been waiting your turn. Are you fired up? He said, oh, my gosh, Mr. Blah, I can't wait to to take this thing and run with it and hopefully show people that I deserve to be the running back here. And it's a nice story. And he has, I think, become the kind of back that you can win a lot of games with. Obviously, the record speaks for itself, but you know how guys get stronger as the game goes on?
Yes.
That's Jeremy Langford. You know, he could take a lot of hits and just continue to churn out yardage. And when the defense gets tired, he doesn't seem like he is, and he still has that sprint left. And oftentimes he has big runs late in ball games to win games. So it's a good story, and I'm happy for him.
Yeah, big runs, a lot of big plays. There's 68 plays at 20 yards or better from scrimmage this year by Michigan State. Defensively, you witnessed last year, George, a very special defense. Very special defense. I mean, no, Jack Ham would comment to me all the time Michigan State was on about how good that defense happened to be. It's a different year, different personality, but they've still created 31 takeaways this year. So where has this defense carved out its niche in your mind?
Well, I think the 31 takeaways is a good place to start. And the fact that they're a high sack team, and the fact that they're hard to run on, maybe not quite as difficult as they were last year, but close. They're a team that has a very, very disruptive front four and linebackers who can make plays. They still have a star cornerback. It just doesn't happen to be Darquez Dennard. It happens to be Trey Waynes.
Right.
And they have a safety who's going to play on Sunday and Curtis Drummond. So there are guys on this defense who could play for anybody. And Shalik Calhoun up at one end, and Marcus Rush, who might be the most underrated player in the conference, at the other defensive end, are just reliable guys who constantly make plays. They miss Max Bullock, but that doesn't mean Tawan Jones isn't doing a nice job at middle linebacker. But there aren't very many Max Bullocks or Danicos Allens, the strong side linebacker from last year's defense, who's a big-time playmaker, pass rusher, you name it. And, of course, just think, last year they had Trey Waynes and Darquez Dennard at their corners, and they had Isaiah Lewis with Curtis Drummond at safety. So you can see why that defense was so special, but you can also see why this defense has been able to carry on the tradition. And you know, you roll out those guys on defense, you always have a chance to win, no matter what your offense does. But I think you have to add in the fact that Mark D'Antonio is a great defensive mind, and he has Pat Narduzzi as his defensive coordinator, a guy who clearly will have more opportunities. He's already had someone turned him down to be a head coach.
From 1993 to 2010, this was the final game of the regular season schedule, Penn State, Michigan State. And I had felt at the end it was starting to develop into a rivalry. Haven't played since that 2010 game when Michigan State, by the way, clinched a share of the Big Ten championship here at Beaver Stadium, 28-22.
Mm-hmm.
Now Penn State's back on the schedule every year because they're going to be in the same division. It doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to be the last game of the season, but from your perspective, George, having Penn State back on the schedule and knowing they're going to be there every year, what does that do for the rivalry, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, I think it's a great rivalry. It's a wonderful opportunity for, from the Michigan State perspective, as far as I'm concerned, to have Penn State come into East Lansing, they're a big draw, and to go to Penn State and play the Nittany Lions at their place. That stadium is a heck of a place to play a football game. Fans seem like they're right on top of you, and there are a lot of them. So I think it's a great thing. And I'm going to throw a question out of you. Why can't it be the last game of the season? What's the problem?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're going to play anyway.
I agree with you.
Why don't they just leave that stuff alone?
I completely agree with you, George. I strongly feel Penn State, Michigan State should be the last game of the season, and let Maryland and Rutgers be the last game of the season for them as well. And I think that solves a lot of problems across the board. I think it's a great way to finish, especially because I think you and I both sense that over the next few years, these two teams are going to get extremely competitive.
Exactly. I think Penn State's still a very, very difficult team to play, even right now.
Yep.
And even though there have been ups and downs this season, and you know the future looks extremely bright for Penn State, and I don't think there's any reason to think Michigan State's not going to continue to be a real player in the East Division and overall in the Big Ten. So maybe they should sit down and think about leaving things exactly the way they are. I think it's great that Wisconsin's playing Minnesota this weekend,
yes.
For instance. Northwestern's playing Illinois. I think Indiana's playing Purdue.
Yep.
Michigan plays Ohio State. Iowa's playing Nebraska, and they seem to be okay with that.
Yep.
So what's the problem? Why don't we just keep playing each other last game of the year?
I'm completely on the same side with you on that. I think Maryland and Rutgers, as the two new schools in the conference, are geographically close enough where they could form a nice rivalry at the end.
Oh, sure they can.
Right, so I think it would work out for everybody across the board if they just left well enough alone.
Well, maybe they will.
Hope so.
You know, maybe they sit down and look at things and say, this is too obvious. I guess we should do it.
George, it's always a pleasure. I can't wait to see you on Saturday. And to you and yours, a safe and happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Steve. Look forward to seeing you guys. And it'll be a great atmosphere. It always is. And I really look forward to it.
Look forward to seeing you, my friend. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Really is quite a run, isn't it?
Wow.
I appreciate being with George very, very much. George also does the Detroit Pistons and has for decades as well. He really has carved out an outstanding career in Michigan by doing both the Pistons and Michigan State football. That's why, if you're wondering, we've had Will Tiemann on the show, who's the play-by-play voice of Michigan State football, who's saying, wow, they split the football-basketball job. It's because George does the Pistons. And Will, by the way, does an outstanding job as well. And I talked to Will this week because Will is actually the host on the Football Network. And he will not be here this weekend. He's very disappointed. He was telling me he won't be here this weekend because he's in Orlando at the Disney Classic. And I did the Disney Classic back in 2007. It's incredible how they treat you down there. Incredible. And take, for example, tonight. What they did with us on Thanksgiving Eve was this. They brought us over to MGM, and they took us down the main street of MGM, and they gave us the light show to Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and then brought us over, and I had my family with me, which was great. This is one of the few times I've actually brought my family on a trip. You know, because, yeah, they had a chance to go to Disney. They had a chance to go to Epcot, which we thought was off the charts. I mean, I think we probably enjoyed Epcot more than anything else. And then we also had this MGM experience on Thanksgiving Eve. Well, after they were done with the light show from Trans-Siberian Orchestra, they then brought us over to the theater area, the open theater area, and they served us. They had... Now remember, you have 8 basketball teams there, plus their entourages, their groups. And of course, I'm part of the Penn State group. And they had, I think, 20 tables, all turkeys. They were carving turkeys for everybody. And I'm talking, I mean, they actually legitimately threw them in the oven for hours and made them. They were 25-pound turkeys. I mean, so that's where Will Tiemann's going to be this weekend. Me, I'm going to have a great Thanksgiving weekend. You know, I love those weekends where I get to combine two of my favorites, Penn State basketball and Penn State football. And I'll be in Soica on Friday for Penn State basketball. The Nittany Lions come in at a 5-1 record, and we heard Dave Paulson earlier in the show. We thank Dave always for his time. Dave does a great job with Bucknell basketball. Penn State will come in with a 5-1 record. They've had to dodge some to get to 5-1, obviously. The miracle comeback against Cornell, holding off USC. And then last night down 13 at halftime and coming back, running off 16 unanswered points to open the second half and then beating Akron 78-72. DJ Newbill had 29 last night. So that will be at 4 o'clock. We're on the air Friday at 3:30 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And then football Saturday, senior day at Beaver Stadium, which will be a 3:30 kick at a 2 o'clock airtime. You know, whenever you go through a crisis, you need to have leaders that step up with both leadership and guts. This senior class has represented Penn State so well as not only great ambassadors for the football program, but great ambassadors for the university. They deserve to be saluted. That will be Saturday, 3:30 the kick, 2 o'clock the airtime. Dick Girardi I work with on Friday. Jack Hamm I work with on Saturday. Kevin Herr I work with every day and have no greater appreciation in the world for working with such an awesome guy like Kevin Herr. I hope you all have a great Thanksgiving, a safe, safe, and happy Thanksgiving, and I look forward to talking to all of you on Monday. Happy Thanksgiving from all of us to you on News Radio 1070 WKOK.